Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
First, our weekly conversation with Ken Rudin, the political junkie. He joins us from the mysterious Washington, D.C. area. Good morning, Ken.
Good morning. I'm sorry I'm a little late. I was just trying to pay my taxes.
Well, thank goodness.
But Somebody should.
We want to see proof, though. We want to see documents.
Right. And, so the New York Times will leak it. Don't worry about
it. Well, I know that really what you want to do here is give us a preview of tomorrow's all-important vice presidential debate. But there, as you kind of hinted, there's been a couple important things have happened since you last joined us. So let's take them in order. So Saturday evening, your evening probably changed when the New York Times published parts of 1 year of Donald Trump's taxes. The documents show that he claimed he lost so much money in 1995 he was likely eligible to avoid paying personal income tax for the better part of two decades. Now, let's be clear. If the story, as the Times story says, if Trump did avoid taxes for that long and for this reason, it was legal. But is this story a bigger problem for Donald Trump or for the members of Congress which allowed this to happen within the tax code?
Well, you know, we always talk about something that's going to be a huge problem for Donald Trump, and it ultimately doesn't turn out that way because he seems to have weathered every storm until now. But I think it is a big deal because basically there are two things that have boosted him to where he is today. One of them was his attacks on President Obama and the so-called birther issue that seemed to disappear shortly before the first debate last week. And second, about his business acumen and how he's such a brilliant businessman and making all these great deals. And if it shows he lost, if he had $916 million in losses in his 1995 tax return, which theoretically, we don't have proof, but theoretically, and we don't have proof because he hasn't released his tax returns, but theoretically it could have kept him from paying income taxes for 18 years, then that also undercuts his argument that he's a very astute businessman.
So the story is based on, well, I think, was it 3 pages of tax return anonymously mailed to the New York Times, and then a lot of kind of humming and hawing and guessing and analysis and whatever. I mean, was this a fair piece of journalism for the Times to do?
Well, you know something, I'm not a fan of illegally obtained. I mean, obviously, if you print somebody's tax returns without their permission, there seems to be something wrong with it. But having said that, you know, I mean, I'm not saying that one thing is right and the other thing is wrong, and I'm not trying to be hypocritical at all. But when the DNC hacks, the email hacks were leaked right prior to the Democratic convention in Philadelphia earlier this summer, the Trump campaign went ballistic with it. They loved it. They just couldn't stop talking about all those illegally hacked emails. And now, of course, the Trump campaign is talking about these illegally obtained tax returns. They probably are illegally obtained. The editor of the New York Times said he'd rather go to prison than not print these kind of things. And I mean, I it's not fair to say that, well, Donald Trump should have released these returns in the first place. But if he did release them, it would have shown that it has nothing to do with an audit, nothing to do with confusing kind of documents. It would have shown, most likely, that he just didn't pay taxes. And, you know, this is the same guy who ripped Mitt Romney, his fellow Republican, in 2012, saying, you've got to release your taxes. He's ripped businessmen in the past, business people in the past, for taking advantage of these tax loopholes. So all the things he's criticized others of doing, and this is what gets me nuts about Donald Trump, all the things he's criticized others of doing, he's done himself, both in the taking advantage of the rigged system. Boy, talking about a rigged system, it's certainly rigged towards the wealthy, and also complaining about other people not releasing their taxes, and here is Donald Trump doing the same.
Now, he is, of course, notoriously litigious, and I mean, do you think it's likely, given the timing of what else is going on, that he will sue?
Well, I mean, it's interesting. He has not questioned the validity of these returns. He's not said yes or no. All he's said so far is that it proves that he's a very astute businessman who's done everything he can to better his company. And you're right, he does sue. And it's interesting, he sues everybody who looks at him cross-eyed, but when he refuses to pay people, and there are so many stories, and it's far more than just anecdotes, so many stories of people who have worked for him, little people, you know, people, contractors, and people who have spent so many weeks and months working on his casinos and his this and his that, and he doesn't pay them. And of course, when you try to sue them or try to bring him to court, he'll agree to pay pennies on the dollar. If this is, I mean, you know, this is just part of who he is and part of his whole business persona. But, you know, look, it's one thing to be legally doing what he's doing, as Rudy Giuliani was on TV many shows yesterday. It's exactly, it's legal. And if I was somebody, if Donald Trump was somebody heading up my company, I would want him to do the same thing. But legal and political are two different things. And politically, I just don't think it passes the smell test.
We're talking with Ken Rudin, the political junkie, a regular here on our Monday morning show. Another thing that happened Saturday night, we had Saturday Night Live. They did a 10-minute reprise of the first debate in its inimitable style. Alec Baldwin as Trump, Kate McKinnon reprised her Hillary. How important are things like that Saturday Night Live sketch to the modern presidential campaign?
Well, you know something, I wonder where people get their news from anymore. They used to, I mean, once upon a time, boy, do I sound old when I'm going to say this, but, you know, when it used to be the Walter Cronkite era where you just had to turn on the network news and see what people had to say. Then came the cable news revolution where they really didn't have much time for introspection. It just basically, you report something and you have to have a 24/7 cycle to keep going. So there's really no context here. And now with viewership of both the cable TVs and the network TVs down, and with the readership in newspapers way down, you wonder if Stephen Colbert and Jimmy Fallon and Jimmy Kimmel and Saturday Night Live may be where many people get their news. And if they do, well, we know that it was almost like I was at a party, and basically it almost felt like New Year's Eve waiting for the ball to drop, waiting for the new season of Saturday Night Live to start and seeing what they had to say about the candidates.
And they were actually very, very good in terms of their impersonations. I mean, it was...
They were, you know, something, but there was some criticism. I think it was either Stephen Colbert or Seth Meyers, or actually it was Samantha Bee on TBS who said, look, this is not funny stuff anymore. I mean, when you have Donald Trump going on Jimmy Fallon and Jimmy Fallon mussing his hair, I mean, is that the best we can do? With how to deal with the candidates. So look, I think it was pretty much on. Hillary Clinton was also not treated, you know, I mean, they were mocking of Hillary Clinton as well. But of course, there's much more to mock with Donald Trump. And I think that's why a lot of people turned it in. And Alec Baldwin, of course, was spot on as Donald Trump, just the way that Larry David is spot on with Bernie Sanders. But I don't think it got voters saying, well, you know something, I was for Trump before, now I'm going to be for Hillary Clinton. I think it basically just made us realize why we like the candidates we do and hasn't changed many minds.
Or perhaps energize the none of the above campaign. But anyway.
Well, that's important, though, because there are still a lot of people who are just not voting. There are Democrats who are not crazy about Hillary Clinton, Republicans who are worried about Donald Trump. And I think that's what the both campaigns have to do in these 5 weeks to go. Tomorrow will be 5 weeks. And basically, it's not to change Trump people to Clinton or vice versa. It's those millennials, those people who are thinking about either voting third party or sitting it out. Those are the people that the two campaigns are going after.
Well, I suppose we should maybe talk about the real campaign. And going back to the first presidential debate, expectations were high for Hillary Clinton. And the polls we've seen this weekend seem to bear out the conclusion that she won the debate handily, at least in the eyes of the public. Was it clear to you that she won?
Well, I'm always a little wary of winners and losers in debates, but I will say that it felt like Donald Trump lost. And I say that because I think he started off strong in the beginning, attacking the Democrats, the Obama administration, and Hillary Clinton for these trade deals, for the loss of jobs, the shifting of jobs overseas. But once the conversation started to go back on Donald Trump, his indefensible defense of birtherism, the fact that he doesn't pay for the people who work for him, the fact that he has his treatment of women, that he gets sued for bias regarding housing, his so-called early opposition to the war in Iraq. It seemed like Donald Trump was on the defensive not all the time. I mean, for most of the debate, and plus the fact between his interruptions and his faces and his just wrong, and you know, it almost sounded like a Saturday Night Live spoof. I think he came, and then afterwards, when not only did he continue his attacks on the Latina former Miss Universe, but also saying, "Well, you know, I sounded terrible because it was a rigged system because my mic was not working." Well, I mean, whatever you think about all that stuff, it just seems like you wouldn't be on the defensive that much if you thought you won, and it seemed clear that he did not win that debate.
Well, there was this kind of awkward moment near the end of the debate where Hillary Clinton interrupted Lester Holt, the moderator, to take a tangent into the story of former Miss Universe Eliseo Machado, who Trump criticized for her weight, amongst other things. I mean, it seemed a little strange at the time, but now it kind of seems like an act of political genius, given what's happened. I mean, what's your take on just this obsession with this one particular part of the debate?
Well, I think it's if you're a Hillary Clinton supporter, if you're a Democrat, if you're opposed to Donald Trump, what we saw in that little segment there was emblematic of what the argument is against Donald Trump. His treatment of women, his treatment of Latinos, in this case a Latino Miss Universe, and the fact that he talked about her weight. She was Miss Piggy. She was Miss housekeeping. I mean, the derogatory comments he made about them, following what he said about that Muslim family, the Khan family, who lost a son fighting for this country. It just seems like that when he's attacked or seemingly attacked, and when Hillary Clinton brought up Miss Machado, obviously he felt attacked. He doubles. He returns the fire over. You know, beyond comprehension, in the sense that he just overdoes it and he becomes the story. And his, you know, he talked about in the debate about his temperament, and he has such, one of his strong suits is his temperament. You'd never know it given the way he lashed out on all those things during the debate and following the debate.
And given, I mean, I think a lot of people were surprised that he decided to get up at 3 a.m. or maybe you
5
still
5 a.m. He's tweeting all in the middle of the morning about you know, these slights that he has. And it's just, and again, I know there are a lot of people say that what's sort of great about Donald Trump is he tells it like it is. There's no filter. But there are so many Republicans that says, please have a filter. You have one more. You have two more debates left. The next one is October 9th. But, of course, it's a town hall meeting debate where you can't. I mean, he says, you know, all the things I held back on, I may not hold back on anymore. And he's obviously talking about Bill Clinton's not so favorable past regarding women. But is that what you want to do? Is that the way you want to go in the last 5 weeks? We'll see. But, you know, it just seems like his path to victory and his supporters' supposed path are two different sets of tactics.
Okay. So, of course, we do have another debate coming up. In fact, you can listen to it here on NPR News on Tuesday. The moment you've been waiting for, Ken, what are you looking forward to with Tuesday's debate between Mike Pence and Tim Kaine?
Thank you for you and others letting me know their names, because I completely forgot who the running mates were. Because, look, this is all about Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. Ultimately, you know, you think about that famous 1988 debate where Lloyd Benson looks at Dan Quayle and says, you know, I knew Jack Kennedy, you're no Jack Kennedy. And everybody laughed at Dan Quayle. And the Bush-Quayle ticket won 40 out of 50 states that year. So, in other words, vice presidential debates will bring some color. There will be some memorable moments. Bob Dole against Walter Mondale talking about Democrat wars. Geraldine Ferraro lecturing the first George Bush on patronizing. But ultimately, it doesn't seem to make a difference. I think you have two serious candidates. Mike Pence is a true blue, true believer, conservative. Tim Kaine is widely thought of as a moderate. Both of them are smart people, whether you agree with their politics or not. But ultimately, as I said, it won't matter that much, and it'll keep us going at least until the next presidential debate, October 9th.
But isn't there a chance at least that this will be almost the most substantive debate of issues? Because they don't have to go through the motions that the two other candidates do?
It could be, and of course you could jump on like the fact that that Mike Pence has released his tax returns, and people will obviously, one of the questions will be how much he differs from Donald Trump. Sure, there'll be substantive arguments, and I think, as I said, one of the reasons Pence is on the ticket is because he and true blue conservatives feel the same way on so many issues. But again, I've never seen, maybe Lyndon Johnson in 1960, but for the most part, I've never seen really where the running mate makes any difference on how people vote in November.
It is certainly going to be an interesting evening for some reasons, though, maybe. I'm not sure. I mean, has there actually been a year when the candidates for vice president have made less news than this one? I mean, they really do seem to fade it into the background.
Well, you know, something I think of sometimes, I think of like when Joe Lieberman and Dick Cheney were running in 2000, or Cheney and John Edwards in 2004, I'm sorry. It really wasn't much focus on that, even though Dick Cheney did have a huge resume. Joe Lieberman was the first Jewish American on the ticket. So there was notice and there was headlines, but really I've never seen such two overpowering presidential candidates, not to mention unfavorable, unpopular presidential candidates as Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton. And again, that's what the headlines will be no matter what happens tomorrow night.
We should just very briefly talk about, there was actually some real kind of political action this week. The U.S. Congress met and actually avoided a government shutdown, and then they also overrode a veto by President Obama for the first time ever. Give us a quick primer on the politics of the bill that would let the 9/11 family sue Saudi Arabia.
Well, you know something, as President Obama acknowledged, it's not a popular position to fight this bill because of course, if you sue the Saudi Arabians for any alleged role in 9/11, then you could say that the Americans could be sued for other kind of retaliatory moves as well. But Congress didn't care about it. It was a 97-1 vote in the Senate, also overwhelming in the House. But it was interesting that many members of Congress from both parties, after the veto was overridden, they said, well, what do we do here? But you know something, coming 5 weeks, 5.5 weeks before an election, it's hard to vote against the people suing the Saudi Arabian Saudi government on this case. So politically, the vote made sense. Practically, I'm not sure how it did, but it was Obama's first veto, which leaves the last president who did not have a veto overridden was Lyndon Johnson. Every president since then has had a veto overridden.
Just amazing. Ken Rudin is the political junkie. He joins us every week from the Washington, D.C. area. Ken, thanks very much, and we'll look forward to hearing your thoughts on the big debate, which we'll all be, of course, watching.
Thanks so much.